In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines, only on SAFM.
So today's In the Spotlight guest is the founder of the, well, Forensics for Justice. He's the director, and this gives it all away, Paul O'Sullivan and Associates, and he's the CEO of the St. Helena Corporation PLC. So Paul O'Sullivan, good chatting to you. Thanks for allowing me to put you in the spotlight.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And as we had said off the air, what, Aluta Continua?
Aluta Continua. It's been going on for, I don't know, it must be 20 years now.
Goodness, you were listening to the news attentively just now, hoping for what?
No, I showed interest in the fact that Duda Maeni is finally going to face the music. I think she's run out of sick notes, and Parliament are going to get her there and put her in the spotlight.
Well, what drives you? I mean, when you think of a prosecutor or somebody who's a judge, maybe that's an easier question to put to them. What is it that drives you? Because you seem to have this ongoing battle. And I would say this battle against people on the wrong side of the law, but not everybody likes you for that, and you know that.
Well, I don't do it because I want them to like me. In fact, the worse the criminals speak about me, I think the better it looks for me. I mean, last year, you know, a year ago, actually, maybe a little bit more than a year ago, Paklani was in 2 days with a chauffeur-driven car, going around all the radio stations and TV stations saying bad things about me. But it's him in the dock, not me.
And when he made those points, I mean, he's not there any longer when he made those points, what did you feel about it?
Well, it's just another criminal performing in public as they do. You know, Radovan Krejcer made I don't know how many TV interviews and radio interviews. And I even took umbrage with one of the journalists who phoned me for a comment. And I said, well, how can you expect me to respond to the comment from a criminal, not just a normal criminal, but the head of a mafia syndicate, and you want me to comment on the false allegations that he's making against me? And ANN7 and their illegal immigrant journalists kept phoning me and pestering me, and eventually they took to having a chat show on the TV, and they had an empty chair there for Paul O'Sullivan.
Oh,
and they say I refuse to go.
But I mean, here's the thought. I mean, whether someone's a criminal, alleged or convicted, and that is an ongoing thing with just about everybody. Okay, the point I want to make is, in the work that you do, you know there's going to be a fight back, isn't it?
Oh, there's.
I mean, nobody
pushback.
Ever just says, okay, even if a person's wrong, so Paul O'Sullivan's after me, he's like, okay, sorry. And just quit. They have turf to guard, isn't it?
Well, curiously enough, and it doesn't happen very often, I'm not going to name names, I interviewed a person today who had allegedly paid bribes in excess of R500,000. And I just thought I'd try my luck, and I asked him to bring his bank statements with him to the interview, and he did. And he'd even taken the trouble to highlight the payments, the bribes that he'd made, and we added it all up. It came to R589,000. So I said to him, but don't you realize you've broken the law here? He said, yes. I think I'll be a bit more careful next time.
And what did you tell him?
Well,
it's a him, right? Yeah.
I thanked him for providing the evidence, and I said he can expect to hear from us soon.
And that point, I'll be a bit more careful next time. Did you get a sense of being more careful in terms of how I cover my tracks when I pay a bribe, or more careful in terms of how I conduct my business?
Well, I hope he meant more careful in terms of how he will conduct his business. But, I mean, if you look at this whole story about state capture, and we've made the point that everyone's talking about what we're going to do now that it's over, but I've made it clear that we consider it's not over, and it will not be over until the criminal justice system is uncaptured, because you have these charges allegedly being brought against various Gupta associates. And I'm just left wondering how they're going to prosecute these people when the people that are going to be doing the prosecuting are themselves implicated.
And the answer to that rhetorical question is what?
Well, it's very simple. I've gone on record as having written to our new president and put to him in the strongest possible terms that every day that Sean Abrahams remains in office is a day too long.
Every Day, A Day Too Long. My in the spotlight guest is Paul O'Sullivan. Amongst many titles, the one that sticks is the founder of Forensics for Justice. Now, you can call in 0891-104207. Of course, we track his journey, so some of the issues are current, as he's already mentioned. But how much do you know about Paul O'Sullivan? The fact that he's not even born in this country. Where did he come from? What does he do? And what inspires him? All those questions you could put to him. I'll certainly do that anyway. Hashtag Afternoon Talk. If you're going to tweet your comments, tweet your questions. And SMS is 40938. But that all-important number, 0891-104207. And if you check it out on the SFM Radio Timeline, there's some pictures of us together, which you can see. Let's then, you did say, I mean, you're fired by a sense of justice. When did you get that sort of aha moment?
Well, coming from a large Irish family, we're all sort of Irish Catholics. I grew up in a rural area where we didn't have electricity, we didn't have water, everything was pretty basic, and there was a lot of children around. Mm-hmm. And one of my brothers, whenever he was naughty, he used to blame it on me. And quite often I got a hiding for stuff I didn't do. And I think by the age of 5 or 6, I realized that, you know, I would set the record straight each and every time. And by the age of 7 or 8, I'd become a detective, and I was able to prove that it wasn't me.
So he put you into training?
Yeah, I guess in a sense, that's what happened. And strangely enough, he went on to become a policeman.
Oh, my goodness.
As did several of my other brothers in different parts of the world. I had an uncle. My father was a colonial policeman. He served in different parts of
Of the world?
Yes, in the then colonies, Malaysia, Kenya, Palestine, and the old Palestine police. In fact, he caught the bombers at the King David Hotel. And he also served in Hong Kong. And, of course, he served in the police in Ireland and England as well. So he was a career policeman.
And well, with that in mind, I will emphasize my surname is Garda, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
There, Garda, right? Shikana, of course. It's, well, you know, translated into English, it means civil guard.
Well, there you are.
Which is the police.
Absolutely. Yeah. How? Why do you think so many of your family are in that space?
I don't know. I think if you know, I was in New York when 9/11 happened, so I've seen firsthand what can happen when security fails at airports. And I went to the funeral a week after 9/11 of a senior police official who was supposed to be hosting my visit in New York in September 2001. And when I went to that funeral, it was in a part of New York, Yonkers, which is famous for their Irish population. And of the, I think, 380 firemen and police officials that died on that day in the Twin Towers, something like 302 of them were Irish. So okay. I suppose it's just become a way of life. You'll find Irishmen in the police forces around the world.
So it's probably part of a culture.
In fact, my uncle is now on pension, Jim O'Sullivan. He was the chief of police in Queensland in Australia for a number of years.
Okay, wow. What are you doing in South Africa? Like, what happened to you?
I came here many, many years ago, and I liked the country. And
why did you come? Holiday? Or
Yeah. And I liked the country. I bought property here. I invested in the country. And in 1990, on the 12th of February, when Mandela was freed from jail, I felt that the future of the country would now move in a direction where I could participate, and I did. And I became a citizen. I became a permanent resident first. I didn't have to apply for much in the way of papers because I had assets here already. And I became a citizen. And I joined the police. And you know, I served my country. In fact, in 1996, I was shot on duty. So, in fact, I was shot 3 times in the same incident. So, you know, I think my father used to say, if a country is good enough to live in, it's good enough to fight for.
Yeah, and that is that what fires you in terms of your own passion?
Yeah, I think that, and, you know, the problem what a lot of the people that in Forensics for Justice, we stand up for the little guy. The people who don't have representation, nobody looks after their interests at all. I mean, we've looked after a number of fairly large tribes in the Northwest Province who've been, for want of a better expression, done over by mining companies. Mm-hmm. And they've come to us, and the mining companies have collaborated with the putative heads of the tribe, and they've all got rich, the putative heads have, whereas the masses in the tribe, they, you know, they're living on the edge of poverty, in fact, in some cases worse than the edge. And we've helped them to take their cases forward and, you know, do what has to be done. We've had people come to our office. I remember one case, a Muslim family, a father and mother of a daughter and four grandchildren who got burnt to death in a fire in Robertsham. And we managed to track down two witnesses, and we're very close now to having the father or the husband, whatever you want to call it, arrested and charged with murder and arson.
And that's now?
That's live, yeah. Okay. We've been working, we worked on that case for 3 years because I just said, you know, these people need justice and we need to make sure they get justice. We did another case, I think, 2 years ago, where a gentleman decided to shoot his wife and make it look like a hijacking. And the parents of the wife came to us. And I suppose that investigation cost me about R500,000. We did the investigation. The parents didn't pay a bean. We put it through Forensics for Justice. And the person is his trial is almost finished.
Okay. And that gets me to ask you, so what is Forensics for Justice? What you know, who owns it? How does that operate?
Well, it's a charity, so it's owned, if you want, by trustees, and I'm one of the trustees. Mm-hmm. I was the founder of it. The executive director is Sarah Jane Trent. She's an attorney, and she's paid the price for being the executive director of Forensics for Justice, too. She's been arrested and harassed and subject to illegal searches by corrupt cops, and that's why I'm saying the capture of the criminal justice system has to be ended, and ended soon.
How would that happen? So, okay, you're emphatic. The criminal justice system has been captured.
It was captured starting back in 2013, 2014, the process to capture it. And by early 2015, it was captured. And the final sort of piece of the jigsaw was to get rid of Pieka. Pieka had her own issues to deal with, you know, management issues. I don't believe Pieka was corrupt. I had a number of journalists hoping to get me to say that on the record, and I said, no, I don't think there was a dishonest bone in her body. But unfortunately, she wasn't a policeman. And if you're not a policeman, you can't run the police. You have to understand that culture. You can't come from an IT management background or business management background and suddenly become a policeman. It doesn't work. And the cops reporting to her, they ran rings around her, and she got turfed out. And I think it was necessary to get rid of it because they wanted to put Baklani in. And what a classic situation. And that was the final piece of the jigsaw.
And that point for the record, and in terms of, you know, capturing the criminal justice system, who wanted it captured? Who has captured it, according
well,
to
Well, obviously Suma and his associates, you know. Mandy Wiener's about to publish a book. I think it's coming out in April. Mm. And I think that's going to set it out fairly clearly. We've published on our website. You can go to forensicsforjustice.org. And on our website, we've published the dockets that we've opened against the people that we're saying have captured the criminal justice system. And we've provided all the evidence, and we've provided the links as to how they did it, why they did it, and when they did it. And we've named the people involved, and that's a criminal docket that's been open for over a year now.
And you're comfortable naming them because you feel you have legs to stand.
Well, it's in the docket, so okay. And we've published the docket.
Right, more to come from Paul O'Sullivan, founder of Forensics for Justice, amongst many other things. 0891104207. What's the one question you always wanted to ask him? Here's your chance. You can do just that. This is the Afternoon Talk Show.
In the spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
Bata Bilir in Kabul tweeting saying, brilliant guest. I'm supposed to be at work, but in the parking lot listening to this hero. Well, we'll keep away from work a little bit longer. I think there's lots of learnings out of that. So good for you, Paul. How often do you get that? From people that come up to you who are not on the other side of this effort to clean up the criminal justice system or want it cleaned up. Person, people like Patabile will say, you know, you're a hero.
We get them all the time. And I have to tell you, and people don't have the same level of faith in their fellow human beings that I have. I have gone on the record multiple times saying that South Africans are 99% good people. And it's this little 1% or even a fraction of 1%. You know, if you had to take all the people that were involved in this so-called state capture, including the capture of the criminal justice system, you wouldn't fill a 747 jumbo jet with them. And that's just a...
But it's the impact, isn't it?
The impact. In fact, people have banded around figures. Some said 100 billion, 50 billion, 500 billion. We've estimated the damage to the country of state capture by this massive crime syndicate, which is probably the largest crime syndicate this country has ever seen. And I've worked on a number of large crime syndicates. You know, Radovan Krecher involved quite a lot of individuals, including cops and so on. But that crime syndicate has cost this country at least 1 trillion rand in terms of brand damage, the setbacks to infrastructure. You know, I was in Alexandra a few weeks ago for a launch of a bicycle scheme run by Kubeka, which is a charity. And while we were there, it started to rain. But, you know, typical Highveld storm. Mm-hmm. And when we left, we had to thank, you know, I was lucky. I was in a Land Rover Discovery, so we had a little bit of depth to ourselves. But the sewers had backed up, the stormwater drains had backed up, and the poor people were walking around barefooted with sewage washing around their feet. And I'm saying that's unacceptable. And the only reason that's possible is because we've had 20 years of corrupt leadership.
So we're short of money, effectively.
Well, we're not short of money.
No,
the money's been spent on other things.
Corruption meaning that the money's out. Right?
When you steal from a sweet shop, you're a sweet thief. If you rob a bank, you're a bank robber. But if you commit corruption, you're stealing the future of the country. And that's what these people have done. They've stolen the future of South Africa.
How do we uncorrupt South Africa?
Well, I've made the point, with my friend Lord Hain, Peter Hain. We had a session in February where we had a public gathering. And I made the point that, in my opinion, we needed Nuremberg-type trials. In other words, we needed a special courtroom. We need to lead the evidence. I think the Commission of Inquiry is a slow way of going about the process. The people need to be criminally charged and they need to be prosecuted. And they need to be given sentences which sends out a signal that it won't happen again. And that's not possible under the current administration of the criminal justice system, because the criminal justice system has to be uncaptured before we complete the cleaning up exercise. Otherwise, these people are going to get off on technicalities and nobody will be punished.
So you think that's where we are? You have the wish list is a Nuremberg trial, for type trial rather. For anti-corruption.
Yeah, I use the word Nuremberg. I'm not suggesting,
fair enough.
You know, in other words, there needs to be a set of trials taking place where at least the ringleaders and a few of the foot soldiers, you know, in Nuremberg, they prosecuted the ringleaders, but there was a few of the foot soldiers prosecuted as well. We need to prosecute a few of the foot soldiers and the ringleaders, each and every one of them, and I know exactly who they are, each and every one of them need to be held accountable. We've got this so-called Priority Crimes Litigation Unit. Every man in that unit is corrupt. He's politically corrupt, and he has served a master.
Every man. You're not even holding back.
Without doubt. I've analyzed each and every one of them. And it's included in a docket that we've opened. And you've only had to speak to any of their victims, which includes Anwar Dramat, Shadrach Sabir, Glynis Breitenbach, Robert McBride, Johan Boysen, Pravin Gordhan, Ivan Pillay, and, you know, the whole lot, Johan van Lochenberg, all these people have been victims of the so-called Priority Crimes Litigation Unit. And they've been bastardized by Sean Abrahams and Michael Hulley, because after Michael Hulley appointed Sean Abrahams, they took a decision to use that unit to silence all those people that were standing up against corruption.
In the way, okay. Well, let's see where that goes. Let's then pause, because we're going to play a song that you've chosen, and I'll do my best in Italian to pronounce it, O Mio Babbino, right?
Mio Babbino Caro.
Okay, all right.
It's from an Italian opera, and I think you'll enjoy it. My daughter sings it very well.
Okay, great. So she performs in South Africa?
Yes, my daughter's an opera singer, right. And she loves singing this particular song.
Looking forward to it. Here it is. Okay, so that's a lovely bit of opera there for the choice of Paul O'Sullivan. There's a couple more. Paul, no one believes your word until it happens. Your courage is larger than life. I think from Gancho, maybe. Thank you, Paul, for all that you do. Mel from Queenstown. It's a blessing to present South Africa, or to represent South Africa that Paul is in. Only a few like Bahlani Haitim from Gole. And another one... Well, saying Buta Ashraf, of course, brother. Paul's opinion is okay. Here's an interesting question: is Julius Malema clean? Yeah, question. Big debate about what he's saying right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and I mean, is he clean in terms of does he take a shower every morning, or is he involved in criminal activity? My personal belief is that he is not currently involved in any criminal activity. I think he may have come close to it in the past, and I think he probably got a lesson and he's moved on from there. It's unfortunate because he's a very bright individual, there's no doubt about that, and despite all the jokes that were made about him in the past, he is, if he uses his intelligence and the people he has around him in the right manner, he can help make this country great. I must say I do get disturbed sometimes when I hear racist comments.
Okay, I want to ask you about that. Just pause for a moment, because let's get the news headlines now. It's 3:30.
Something has come naturally to SAFM, like being SA's news and information leader. SAFM, 104 to 107.
Paul O'Sullivan is with me. There's a couple of very complimentary SMSs, 40938. There are certainly many others via Twitter, hashtag Afternoon Talk, and then tweet to me, Ashraf Garda, as well as to SAFM Radio. So let's just stay with the Julius Malema. You said, you're saying he came close, but not?
Well, I'm just saying, I've personally never carried out any investigations.
On him, yeah.
Yeah, so, and, you know, there's been given to me no reason why I should carry out any investigations. So whatever happened in the past, I believe he may have fallen foul of the tax regulations and so on and so forth. But I think probably today he pays his taxes like everybody should do, because it's your taxes at the end of the day, which provide the infrastructure. And we have such a backlog of infrastructure in South Africa. I regularly pay my taxes every month. I make sure that I pay every cent. And if anything, I probably pay too much because I don't claim for the things that I could claim for.
Okay. You were talking about race relations earlier, just before the break.
Yes.
Tell me
Look,
your
you
thoughts
know,
on that.
We carry a very difficult past in this country because for many, many years, you know, after the country was colonized, and I understand it as an Irishman because we were colonized for 700 years.
Yeah, wow.
And it took us 700 years to break the back of that colonization. And part of Ireland today is still not free of that colonization. So after 700 years, The relationship now between Ireland and Britain is probably stronger than it's ever been. We even had the Queen coming to Ireland and laying wreath at the IRA cenotaph.
Oh, my goodness.
So
changed, yeah.
Anything is possible. And I think especially young people like Julius and his followers, they have an opportunity to actually bring the races closer together. And instead we're having some of the outspoken younger members, you know, talking about killing whites, and it's unnecessary. And if we can just, if Julius takes a bit of a harder line, disciplines those people, and either kicks them out of the EFF or holds them over, you know, binds them over to keep the peace in the future, I think he'll go a long way towards resolving some of the issues.
What do you think? Is he playing that role? Or he's not doing so?
I think he's sooner or later going to start. You know, we're in a sort of closed period now. The elections are coming up in a year's time. And he probably wants to get votes. And all I'm saying is the votes that rely on racism aren't worthwhile votes. Let's get the votes where people want to see you helping to build the future. I agree with the, you know, the land redistribution in terms of a legal process. It has to, you can't have this like it happened in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is still suffering because of what happened in.
So what should happen around land?
It needs to go. Look, we've done an investigation, and it's on the Forensics for Justice website. We selected a sample of farms in Mpumalanga, which were quote unquote subject to redistribution in terms of the Land Restitution Act. And we were able to prove, and it's there on our website, that each and every one of those farms was subject to fraudulent claims. And the value of the farms was grossly inflated so that money could be siphoned off and paid to politicians. Now, if we're going to have land redistribution on that basis, it's going to go. Those farms, by the way, were employing people. They were owned by white farmers, and they were employing farm laborers, and those laborers are now all unemployed, and the farms are lying fallow. The machinery has gone rusty or it's been stolen, and there's thousands of hectares of land that are now lying fallow. If they want to redistribute land, and I believe it should be redistributed, they must follow a proper lawful process, and there must be some method of making sure that the people that ultimately receive the land are equipped to work the land and add value to the economy of the country.
They may just ask you for advice. Quick one, because you've pronounced on Julius Malema. So let's do the same on two other people. Musi Maimane, leader of the DA. Just your thoughts on him, like in a one sentence.
Okay,
opinion.
Well, he's a politician, isn't he? You know? And I mean, he's between a rock and a hard place, because you've got a political party which, on the one side, wants to fulfill the need of the masses, but on the other side is expected to fill the need of the minority. And I think he's in a very difficult position. I don't envy him. As a person, he's clearly a very highly intelligent individual, and I think he's got the right level of ethics. You know, if I look at some of the people that he's brought in, Herman Mashaba, the mayor of Johannesburg, he's a personal friend of mine. And I can't think of a more ethical person in terms of work ethic. That guy is working 18 hours a day, every day of the week, 7 days a week, to help make Johannesburg a better city for all of its citizens. And I've met with the mayor of Shwani, another brilliant individual, hardworking individual. So they are moving in the right direction, but I think they're caught between a rock and a hard place.
Okay, so from one businessman turned politician in Herman Mashaba to the other, the so-called McDonald's man, as some people jokingly talk about, our president.
Cyril and I, Actually, we go back.
I saw some pictures of you guys from all those years ago.
We go back a number of years. Maya Khan at the time was the Business Against Crime. I was involved with Business Against Crime. And in the middle 90s, we managed to persuade Maya Khan to become the CEO of the police. It didn't work out, you know, unfortunately, but it was a lesson for the police and it was a lesson for everybody involved. And at the same time, Cyril was persuaded to become a police reservist and I trained him. And
so you trained him as the police reservist?
Correct.
He's still looking after the country now in a very different way.
Absolutely. But what I liked about Cyril, despite the fact that he was no longer involved in politics then, because you know, he'd negotiated what I consider to be one of the best constitutions in the world. And he was now a businessman. And I told him straight up, I said, Cyril, if you miss any of the lectures, there's certain lectures that if you miss them, you have to start the course again. So I said, if you miss this lecture, you're going to have to start again. And there's no changes made just because it's you. And he took this on board. He would fly back from London, attend a lecture, and then the next day fly back to London to carry on with his business. So he was very committed. And I think I awarded him with a prize. We had a shield for the top performing student. He didn't score the best marks, but his dedication, I've never seen anything like.
So one line pronounced on him? Now?
I believe he's a good ethical leader, and I believe that he will set this country on the right path. I stopped voting for the ANC in 1999, and if Cyril does what I expect him to do, I will vote again for the ANC.
Okay, got that. Let's get some calls, right? 0891-104-207. I'll take maybe 2-3 calls in one go, so if you are calling in, now is your chance. Eunice on the line from Joburg. Eunice, go ahead, hello.
Yeah, hi there. Hi, Paul.
Hello there.
Paul, you've handled some high-profile cases. Now, currently, you know, there's been a spate of kidnappings of affluent.
Eunice got... Hello?
Okay,
we've just lost what you said. Eunice, just repeat it. A spate of kidnappings of affluent something. We missed that. Yeah, go ahead.
Affluent people.
Right.
And I'd like to know if Paul has been contacted regarding these cases, because a similar scenario prevailed in Mozambique where rich business people were kidnapped, and apparently it's, from what we hear, it's foreign syndicates that are targeting. Currently, there's one affluent businessman in the Gauteng region who's been kidnapped, and the similar scenario is what Mr. Karim from Pretoria was kidnapped a few months ago.
And a call for ransom.
Okay. Yes, for ransom.
Let's get that, Eunice. Okay, thank you for that. Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks, Eunice. Yes, I have been contacted. And it's been an initial contact, and I've been asked if I will assist in drawing up a plan to, first of all, be proactive and prevent the kidnappings, and secondly, track down the syndicate that's involved and have them you know, brought into the criminal justice system. So the answer is short. Yes, I have been connected.
You believe that he's a syndicate?
Yes.
That would target, and the motive is money?
Yes, and unfortunately, the people that, the families of the people that are getting kidnapped, they're paying the ransom, and
should they? Should they not?
No. Once you pay the ransom, you encourage them. It's like these pirates that were stopping the ships.
Okay, but versus the obvious fear that they're going to kill someone very close to you.
Well, yeah, but at the end of the day, unfortunately, you know, once you start paying kidnappers, you propagate the crime.
Okay.
But there are ways of dealing with it, which I don't think I'll discuss on air. And I am busy putting a plan together.
All right. Let's see if we can get another call in a moment. We'll get to that in just a second. 0891-104-207. What do you think is your greatest skill? I mean, of all the things, I know you're in, you know, you're in forensics, but your actual, in terms of characteristics, what's your great gift?
I don't know. I suppose finding the truth. I don't necessarily take everything at face value. I dig deep, I investigate, and I get to the bottom of things, and I find out the truth. And I believe perhaps part of that is knowing how to interview people, how to talk to people, how to negotiate with people.
And when people get nailed, like Jackie Salibi, and you mentioned Kretcher and Batlani, you know, you'd like to sort of punch your fist in the air, like, you know, you've won a big sports tournament. Is that sort of rejoicing, or what do you do?
Well, no, I think, unfortunately, by the time justice is served on those individuals, I'm busy with the next one, so I don't have time to celebrate. And to be frank with you, I don't get any kicks out of it either. I believe it has to be done. The satisfaction I get out of it is that we're going to restore justice. And that's what it's about. It's about restorative justice. And there are too many victims of crime in South Africa who don't see justice. And we want to make sure that they will see justice.
Maybe we're going to wrap up in a couple of minutes or some very quick calls. Jeremy in Parktown. Go ahead. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Ashraf, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Go ahead. I'm sure you want to talk to
Paul, yeah? Paul, it's so nice hearing about everything that you've said. You've given me a bit of a history of your life and when you started. Have you got any books that you've written on cases, et cetera, that are quite good for us to read?
There are. Listen on the radio. There are. You want to say something else?
I will do, Ashraf. I will do. Yes, Ashraf.
Okay, got that. Thank you. Right. The book that you've written, that's a bestseller.
Well, I didn't write the book.
Well,
actually.
It's about you.
Marianne Tam wrote
yes,
the book.
Yes, of course.
And I think she did a fairly good job. It sold quite a few thousand.
And it's called, just tell us?
To Catch a Cop.
Yes, of course. And that's the book you need to get.
I've started writing my own book because somebody told me that I should try and tell it through my own words. So I've written chapter one.
Okay.
And that's taken me a year to write. So I do it when I have nothing else to do. But there are a number of other books. Jock Poe wrote a book. It's not about me, but it
gives your sense of work. Yeah.
Mandy Wiener's about to publish a book, I think, in April. I haven't seen the book, but I'm a little bit disappointed because Mandy always allows a criminal to say what they want about me. So that'll probably be in the book as well. But I suppose that's freedom of speech, you know. But I personally wouldn't give criminals freedom of speech.
You wouldn't?
No.
Why not?
Because they are criminals. And if you give a dishonest person freedom of speech to badmouth like Poklani did, the media published everything he said about me. And really, at the end of the day, he's the one that's now looking a little bit
stupid. And
what
about a rehabilitated criminal who comes out and then says, well, my life's now clean. I'm sort of, you know, moving on. And often they get celebrated.
Like the Sushi Kings.
Well, maybe. And they get celebrated.
Look, I don't know. Being a criminologist, I'm of the view that the South African criminal justice system does not rehabilitate too many criminals. They go into prison being little criminals and come out being bigger criminals.
Okay, there we are. Do you have a mantra that you live by besides a sense of justice?
Well, yeah, somebody once said to me, well, you know, how do you decide where the line is? And I said, I've got a very simple, I never do anything that I can't tell any of my 7 children about. And I think if I stick to that rule, I ask myself the question sometimes and I think, well, is this right what I'm doing? And I ask, well, I think of how picky some of my children are. And I think, well, if I can tell this one about it, then it's fine. If I can't, then I shouldn't be doing it.
That's a good point. Something I can't tell I need to tell my 7 children. There you are. Fascinating. Right. Quick questions. We're going to wrap up with about a minute and a bit to go. So who would you like to take out to lunch? Like someone you haven't taken out to lunch before?
I think if I took somebody out to lunch, it would be Julius Malema, David Mabuza, and Kali Creel.
Okay.
And I'd put plenty of whiskey on the table and watch.
All right. That'll be a fascinating discussion. Let us know what happens when that finally does happen, right? Advice to the president? One line of advice to him?
Clean up the criminal justice system. Start with Sean Abrahams.
Okay. A book that you strongly recommend we must read?
Well, I'm not a reader of books, but the book that I've read that I suppose meant a lot to me was The Power of One.
Okay, and certainly to many other people too. Is that a quote that inspires you all of the time that you'd like to share?
Yeah, a person who I think he died in 1984, a chap by the name of L. Ron Hubbard. Mm-hmm. He formed an organization called Scientology. I'm not a Scientologist, by the way, but I've read some of his books, and in one of his books called Dianetics. He says, no matter what the problems are, something can be done about it. So I always say when people present these enormous problems, I just say, well, something can be done about it.
Okay, maybe a good way to wrap up then is what's the legacy that Paul O'Sullivan would like to leave? You already have a legacy. What would you ultimately want to leave?
I don't know. I suppose at the end of the day, when I'm long gone, if my name is remembered, which it probably won't be, I would like people to think that I was loyal to my country, because above all else, I've been accused of treason and espionage and all sorts of other heinous crimes by law enforcement agents in this country. And I just think it would be nice for somebody to say that guy was loyal to South Africa.
Well, there you are. South Africa first, bottom line. Paul O'Sullivan, great chatting to you as always. Looking forward to seeing what comes out next in your career.
Thank you so much.
And there's a glowing number of tweets which you can check out just now. Hashtag Afternoon Talk. Look out for it. Time now for Radio VUCA.